So I'm here to show you how to take the details that Chazal just assumed intuitively and to develop through lambdas, through analysis, what the details show us about the categories. Okay, that's a short definition of lambdas, turning details into categories. If you want, it's called induction. Induction means you take details and you induce principles. What's the opposite of induction? Deduction. You take principles and you deduce details. That's all of Shas. You take a detail. What does it show us about Eidos? Now that I know Eidos, now I can apply it to 5,000 other cases of Eidos, because now I've built a category that's exportable across Shas. That's what Lamdas tries to do. If you're just looking at details, they're scattered, isolated, and they're totally unrelated. Detail, detail, detail. Once you turn detail into a reflection of a category, then you can apply that. Now that I know what Eidos is according to Abaye, based on the way he defined Psoletus, and now that I know what Eidos is according to Rava, based on the way he defined Psoletus, now I can start to think about cases about Eidos that seem totally unrelated, but now I've got my language. What is Eidos? What is Psoletus? Okay? Okay. So you're learning Maseches Sanhedrin. And Maseches Sanhedrin develops the judicial system. And every society needs a judicial system. Of course, ours is based on the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we believe that the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the source of all human morality. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Just because you're not Jewish or religious doesn't mean you're not moral. It's because you have a moral instinct. But who put the moral instinct into your heart? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu put a moral instinct into people's heart. That's why we build societies and democracies and judicial systems and orderly societies. But to us, he said, don't just follow your heart, follow my will. And 99% of the time, Hashem's will and our moral instincts will overlap. There's 1% of the time where they don't overlap. We call that the Akedah. At the Akedah, you have to submit to Hashem. So a lot of boys your age are struggling with religion and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. 99% of religion makes sense to me. It may not make sense to you because you're still young. And as you grow older, it will make more sense. When you're young, the Isser of Negiah doesn't make so much sense to you. Why can't I touch a girl? As you get older, you realize what sexuality is and what relationships are built on and what the language of intimacy is. Thank God. When I was your age, I wasn't over Negiah. Not because I understood why I should have, because it makes my marriage so much healthier, my understanding of my own emotions and my sexuality. Because I didn't spend that language on some woman that I would never have anything to do with. So as you grow older, Shabbos makes sense. Not everything makes sense. Like, I don't think I'll ever crack Basar B'Challah. I don't know why Basar B'Challah is Asar. Some things seem to grate on me. I don't understand why Kodesh Baruch Hu said homosexuality is a teweva. And on the other hand, people today who are normal and average people like you or me have homosexual tendencies. I can't grasp that. Quite frankly, I think I'm going to go to my grave not having an answer to that question. And as an Orthodox Jew, I have only one solution to that. A, I have to be mechaber Hashem's will in Zasser. B, when people are homosexual, I have to honor them and respect them because they're normal people. And how can I reconcile the two? I don't know. I can't understand the depths of it. But you know what? Your grandparents went to the grave not understanding the Holocaust, right? Your grandparents who escaped the Holocaust, they were facing the single greatest act of murder in human history. Now HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed. So part of being an Oved Hashem is living with questions, not having all the answers. When you're this age, you think, if just work hard enough and learn Yeshiva, I'll get all the answers. You know what? It's about getting answers and living with questions. There's no way that Avram can understand the Akedah because it's murdering his son. He just goes up and does what Hashem wants him to. And that's what Avodah Hashem is. You try to understand. Half the time you succeed in understanding. 99% of it makes sense. Here and there, things don't make sense to you. So let's try to see Maseches Sanhedrin, which is built on building a judicial system. But then there's another track. We would call in the modern era mediation or arbitration, because every judicial system is going to be bogged down if every single case is going to come to court. And not just will it be bogged down if every single case comes to court, but it's going to lead to a lot of contentiousness, because every litigation leads to strife and argumentation. So there's good reason to build an alternate track called arbitration. It eases the load on the judicial system, and it also creates more harmony and more better relations. Okay? So Halacha also allows for it, and it's called Pshara. Pei, Shin, Resh, Hei. And the Gemara talks about the halachos of Pshara. Now, what we're going to talk about today, I'm going to spoon feed you these concepts because you're not trained to induce them from the details, but I'm going to give you the concepts and we'll deduce the details. When you're learning through Shas, you're looking at the details, you have to try to induce the concepts. So we're going to discuss today, okay, the following question. When a Kodesh Baruch Hu, is there an eraser here? When a Kodesh Baruch Hu established the concept called Shah. Okay? Listen carefully, because I want you guys, A, to learn how to learn, but B, to think about what you'll be doing next year every day, and how this can change the way you see Gemara. When a Kodesh Baruch Hu developed the concept called Shah, which we'll call arbitration, instead of saying, I don't know, just know Eitan and Michael, is Eitan and Michael having an argument, instead of bringing them to court and trying to see who's right and who's wrong, you said, guys, why don't you just create some compromise, 70-30, 60-40, whatever. That's called pshara, a compromise, arbitration, mediation. Is this really independent of Beis Din? It has nothing to do with Masechta Sanhedrin, and you're totally, totally walking out of Masechta Sanhedrin when you're engaged in pshara? Or is pshara part of Din? Is it Beis Din has two rooms? When you come into Beis Din, there's one room which is called legal verdicts and judicial process and Edim and everything you're learning. And then that room over there, Beis Din, they're not sending you out of the building to go meet with an arbitrator and meet with a mediator. It's part of Beis Din's larger, overarching sponsorship. So this may seem like a semantic question, but you'll see this question may have some very, very important consequences. Consequences in halacha are called nafkaminas. When you're looking at Shas, you're looking at the nafkaminas and you're trying to reverse engineer the concepts. I'm giving you the concepts and you're going to try to apply them to the details. No one's going to ever, you're not going to learn Gemara this way. You don't have all the codes, you don't have the cheat sheets. You're sitting and making your way through Tosfos and Rashi and the Rashba, looking through all the details. How do I take these details and try to assume or deduce the concept? Once I have the concepts, I can go global and apply it to the rest of Shas. That's why I love this. It's so important because it integrates Shas. You're not just learning one sugya. We're now learning what are Beis Din's different compartments. That will help us better understand Beis Din. If Shara is internal to Beis Din, that says one thing about Beis Din. If Shara is external to Beis Din, it's a different building, then this is a different part about Beis Din, right? What's a nearby school here or shul, just so I can use it for help make a visual? Is there a shul nearby? Young Israel. So let's just talk about, is Shara part of Maimonides? Maimonides is the Beis Din. Or is Shara, leave Maimonides and go to the shul, Young Israel. I just want to help you visualize Lundus, because Lundus is very abstract, so if I give you these examples, you can better visualize it, okay? So the first thing we always want to do is we want to go back to the source. We want to go back to where we learn halacha, because evidently the source may reflect the nature. Where does it come from in the Torah? When we learn the halacha of pshara, which pasuk in the Torah teaches us the halacha of pshara? Okay? So let's take a look, interestingly enough. Look at me. There are two different sources in the Gemara. So if there are two different sources, that may imply that there are two different models on the same chart, like we have on the board. Chazal didn't have, there's not one truth in Har Sinai. Moshe received from Hashem millions and millions of different ways to view something, in ways that your mind can't understand because your mind's a binary, so is mine. So if I hold something up, it's either Tamei or Tahor. But that's just in this world where we have to apply a certain protocol to treat it as Tamei or Tahor. But there are multiple truths. The opposite of a false statement is a true statement. The opposite of a profound statement is another profound statement. So Hashem deals in profound statements, not binary truths. Hashem is Yotzer or Varechoshech. For us to see the light of day, it can't be both. So Kadosh Baruch is everything, because he's everything. So there's not one truth. So when I say, what is it? It's not like, we'll have to make a decision. It's, how did Hashem present Pshara to Moshe Rabbeinu in different ways? When it comes to Halacha, we have to practice one way of Kiddush, and one way of Lulav, and one way of Sukkah. Although even that is post-Shulchan Aruch. Before the Shulchan Aruch was written in the 16th century, there was pluralism in Halacha. It's everyone paskin like their local Rav. The Ramban in Spain had one psak, and Tosus in France had another psak, and Rashi in Germany had a fourth psak, and everyone had 16th century, Galus became too destabilizing. Rabbi Yosef Kara had to write a Shulchan Aruch in which he had to standardize Halacha for all Jews, and even there there's Ashkenazim in Sfarim, but there's no one truth. Every line in Gemara presents part of Hashem's brain, part of Hashem's intellect, part of Hashem's Chachma. And I want to learn as much of Hashem's Chachma as I can, because that's the best I can do to understand it, because I can't understand Hashem, because it's not physical, I can't describe it. That's why Torah is so important, because every line that I read, I'm learning more about HaKadosh Baruch Hu in ways that aren't human, in ways that are above Shiva. Okay? So let's take a look at the Gemara Bava Meveis with that long with an introduction. Tell me, we have till when? 9:42 or something? I was told? When does the period end? 9:30?
40.
All right, let's look at Daf Vav, and we'll see one makor for pshar. So the first makor is a source, mem kuf vav resh. So it's vav in the base in Sanhedrin. Okay, so the Gemara says as follows. Okay, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, it's about a third of the way down on vav in the base. The line starts with the word zeh. So look for the line that begins with the word zeh. It's somewhere in the middle of Tosos, Dibra, Maschel, Nigmar. So if you look at Tosos, Dibra, Maschel, Nigmar, it's in the middle of that Tosos. Look at the parallel Gemara. The line starts with Zeh, And at the end of the line is the word Rebbe. So either look for a line that starts with Zer, or look for a line that ends with Rebbe. Rebbe Shua ben Karcha, according to many people, he was the son of Rebbe Akiva, because Rebbe Akiva was bald. So he was called Rebbe Shua ben Karcha, the son of the baldy. Tosfos and Shabbos does not like this. It's highly unlikely that people would call Rebbe Akiva baldy. Anyway, interesting. He had another father who was bald, but not Rebbe Akiva. So the big machlokes in Rashi and tells us who Rebbe Shua ben Karcha was. Rebbe Shua ben Karcha, however, says, Mitzvah Livtzoa. Notice the word Livtza. I'm going to write this on the side. Is it Pshara? Another word we have is Livtza. We're going to see why this is important a little bit later. Okay, so he calls it Livtza. Mitzvah Livtza, to split it in half. Bitzua means to split in half. Shenemar, he quotes the pasuk in Zechariah. Zechariah is one of the 12 Nevi'im. One of the things I want you guys to do in Eretz Yisrael that we work very hard in Yeshiva is we want you to open your mind to the world of Tanakh, which unfortunately gets a little bit neglected here in North America. Have you learned Zechariah? Have you learned Yeshaya? This is part of your Avodas Hashem, is to return to Israel and return to the book of Tanakh. So it's something we work very hard on. You may have heard of Rabbi Liebtag, you may have heard of Rabbi Yehuda Binon, some of the great, great Tanakh teachers in Eretz Yisrael. People learn Tanakh very, very, very seriously. Something in North America, less popular, less involved in. Okay, so we should have been Karchomer, Mitzvah, Litzar, Shenemar, Pasuk, and Zechariah. Emes, Umishpat, Shalom, Shiftu, B'Sharechem. The Navi says that in your gates, namely in your cities, you should pursue truth, justice, and peace. Wait a second. How can you have both? Valo, the end of the line, b'makum she'esh mishpat, ein shalom. If there's justice, there's no peace. Because if there's justice, Eitan will win, Michael will lose, and Michael will be angry at me, and angry at Eitan. So I can't create peace if I create justice. Okay? B'makum she'esh shalom, ein mishpat. And when there's harmony, let's say I give Michael half and Eitan half, then there's no justice, because one guy's right, one guy's wrong. So how can I have mishpat and shalom? So Gemara says, Ella, Ezel Mishpat Sheish Bal Shalom, how can I have a little bit of each? Do a Pshar. Pshar is a little bit of each. On the one hand, everyone's walking away with some part of the pie. On the other hand, it looks a little bit like we're trying to find an answer. So since there's this contradiction in Zechariah between Mishpat and Shalom, the compromise or the reconciliation of these two opposing forces is what we call Pshar. On the one hand, now read that line again and tell me which model you think this pasuk implies. Read that line again, Ella. Read it again together. It's the line that begins with the word shalom. Ezeu mishpat sheyesh bo shalom. Haveyomer ze bitzua. Mishpat sheyesh bo shalom. Does that sound like pshara is part of Beis Din or autonomous from Beis Din?
Part of Beis Din.
Excellent. What's your name?
Ben.
Ben. Why? What phrase makes you feel like it's part of Beis Din?
Mishpat.
Mishpat sheish bo shalom. Shalom is the qualifier, mishpat's the definition. Excellent. Okay? So it sounds like from the pasuk in Zechariah that it's part of Din. Mishpat sheish bo shalom. So if we're just looking at Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha's makor, it sounds like Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha was aligned with this view. Now let's take a look at Lamed Beis and Amud Beis, and we'll see a very, very different Makor for Pshara. Okay, so it's a Lamed Vav Amud Beis. I know we're skipping around a little bit, but when you learn concepts, you don't learn pages. Chazal knew it so well, they just had conversations. They didn't write it like a math book or a philosophy book, because they knew it so well, they're just talking like you and I. We talked about the Patriots and the Celtics. They knew it so well. We have to try to unpack it and organize it better, so we'll read from the Shiva. We're not going to learn one page. We're going to learn... Well, who knows where we'll end up in Shas, in different Gemaras, in different Mishorim, in different Achronim, because we have to hunt down the relevant information that helps us understand the concepts. So on Lamed Beis, Amud Beis, and the Torah begins, Parsha Shoftim, with an interesting pasuk in which it says, Tzedek, Tzedek, Tzedek. You may know the pasuk. So why is there a double language? So the Gemara has a whole conversation, but one answer to the Gemara is, okay, this is about eight lines down. The line begins with the word kiddushanin. Kiddushanin, about eight lines down. Lamed vav, lamed beis, lamed beis. I say lamed vav, lamed beis, lamed beis. Okay, lamed beis, lamed beis. I'm sorry. Kiddushanin. Still jet lag. I can't sleep so much last night. Kiddushanin, cry. Echad ledin v'echad lepshar. One word teaches us din. Regular verdict. Who's right, who's wrong. Aiden, like you're learning this year. A different word in this pasuk, not the same word, a whole different word teaches us pshara. Can anyone tell me what this makar sounds like? It's separate words, separate drasha. It's not mishpat sheyesh bo shalom, but what does it sound like?
Separate.
Separate. Separate circum, separate tracks. So this drasha of Daf Lamed Beis and Beis may be more reflective of it being independent, very clearly enough, independent. Okay? Now, you could argue either. You could say that maybe since it's the same word, that suggests similarity rather than discrepancy. You could argue your definition of Mishpat Sheyesh Bo Shalom. But I just want to train you, when you're trying to define a concept, the first step you should make is go back to the source. Where does the Gemara learn it from? It's not always so easy. Some halachas are derabanan. You don't have a source. There's only one source. It's not clear what the source is. It's not always available. But here you have psukim. So go back to the psukim and see what the psukim say and listen to what the psukim are telling you. What nature, what halacha are they trying to define? Okay, so you may ask yourself, why do I care about all this? Why do I care whether Peshawar is an integral part of Beis Din, that other room in Maimonides, or it's a totally separate arbitration, go to the young Israel and work it out there. So let's see a Machlokas Tanaim, and you'll start to see how when the Tanaim spoke, they were speaking in this language, but they knew it so well, they could just talk about the applications rather than the concepts. And everyone in the room, now I call them finger snappers. Everyone in the room knew what they were talking about. So let's look at Vavim and Aleph. Let's go back to Vavim and Aleph. And let's see a Machlokas Tanaim between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Rabbi Meir was one of Rabbi Akiva's five last Talmidim. Rabbi Akiva lost 24,000 Talmidim in a plague. He then said, I may be very, very old. I'm not going to throw in the towel and hang up my cleats. I'm going to work even harder. So then he trained five Talmidim who changed the world. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, and Rabbi Yossi. And they changed the world. Rabbi Meir didn't write, but basically 80% of the Mishnah is based on Rabbi Meir's teachings. He was a great teacher. He was a very clear thinker. So every time Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi quoted him, he didn't have to tag him because 90% of it is Rabbi Meir. So he tagged whenever he didn't quote Rabbi Meir. So whenever the Mishnah says something anonymously, it's Rabbi Meir. So we're learning, every day of your life, you're learning Rabbi Meir's statements because he was such a clear, I try to be a clear speaker. I write a lot for our newspapers. I work very hard at taking complex, abstract structures, helping you clarify, visualize, and internalize them. It's not a very, very dumb Rebbe. I'm not a smart person. If I took an IQ at one score high, that's what makes me a great teacher, because I don't go from A to Z. I go from A to B to C to D. My mind has to work slowly. So slow it down. Brightness is not always so great. Intellect isn't so great. Learn to be methodical, organized, and systematic. Okay? So the Gemara in Davav Manalef, because the focus between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, how many people should supervise the Pshara? In front of how many panelists should you conduct your Pshara negotiations? So Gemara says as follows. It's about two-thirds of the way down, Vavim and Aleph, the word Bitsua. Bitsua Bishlosha, Divrei Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim Amrim Pshara Biyachid. Okay, I'm just going to write it on the board because we're going to come to this a little bit later. We may need it later. I'm going to write this on the board and some other stuff. Okay? Bitsua Bishlosha Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says three. The Chachamim Omrim Pshara Biyachid. I'm going to say one. Can anyone tell me, we'll see this in a minute in the Gemara, why Rabbi Meir would require three? Why the Chachamim would say one is enough based on that question? Anyone? What's your name?
No.
Because Rabbi Meir said it's part of the deal. Exactly. If it's like din, then maybe we need it based in a three. And the Chachamim say it's in the bed. Now, let's see what the Gemara says. If you know what you're looking for, it's just staggering when you actually see it. Skip a couple lines. Baha kamiflagi. The line begins with the word Baha. Now, if you want to read it, Baha kamiflagi. Towards the bottom. Demar Savar. Rabbi Meir holds. Marisavar makshin on Pshara Ladin. We compare Pshara Ladin. Look at me. That's exactly what Noam said. Rabbi Meir, who holds three, says we compare Pshara Ladin. Umarisavar, the Chachamim hold, lo makshin on Pshara Ladin. We don't compare it to Din. You just said what the Gemara says. I mean, I fed it to you. I got you. You know, I brought you towards it. So machloksin and shas are never arbitrary. Rabbi Meir didn't say three because he woke up on the right side of the bed. No, Rabbi didn't say one because he woke up on the left side of the bed. Every machlokas and shas is reflective of a fundamental disagreement about how to view the halacha. Rabbi Meir said, you need three because we want to make it look like Beis Din. So you need a jury of three people. Chaim said, it's a separate arbitration. Just have some guy there conducting traffic and helping things out. So now we have our first real nafkamina, not just where we get it from, but you need three or one. Rabbi Meir says three, the Chachamim say one, namely, how many people do you need? Okay?
Now, remember I told you before that when you abstract machlokes into concepts, you can globalize them and connect them to seemingly unrelated issues? Details are unrelated, but let's say I induce that this is a liquid because I shake it around and I hear noise. So I've taken a detail and created a category. It's a liquid, not a solid. I can then say, well, if I send it up in a spaceship, it's going to react the following way to zero gravity. So I can connect how it would relate to zero gravity based on how it sounds when I shake it. So that's what this is. So now let's see if there are other factors about Pshara that we can try to assume based on this. So now the Gemara wants to know the following. When the two people, let's say Michael and Eitan, are finished with their Pshara, do they need to make a Maisa Kinyan to obligate one another to stick by the Pshara? Do they have to make, anyone know what a Maisa Kinyan is? Where you lift something up, what do you call that? When you lift something up, what do you call it? Chalipa. Do they need a Maisa Kinyan to lock it in?
Makes sense,
but there has to be two ways. It's not voting, it's trying to see dualities. Right? Voting means what you agree with. Duality means because there's going to be a machlokas. Well, can anyone finish the sentence? If Pshara is just a way to come into Beis Din and hear their opinion, but not a binary exclusive opinion, absolute 100 versus 0, but to hear them give us some other verdict, would I need a kinyan to obligate the parties? If it's a psak of Beis Din, what obligates the parties? Beis Din's psak. If Beis Din stamps its imprimatur on this pshara, like just a psak, when you make a psak, let's say Michael and Eitan come to Beis Din and they process it normally, not through pshara. Beis Din says Eitan wins and Michael loses. That's it. You have to follow Beis Din. There's an authority of Beis Din that dictates submission and cooperation. So finish the sentence. If pshara were part of din, then would you need a kinyan to create a machinery of obligation? No, because based in imprimatur, based in sponsorship, based in insignia, based in supervision would create that obligation and responsibility. If I need a kinyan, it makes it sound like we're dealing with something internal or external?
External.
Like I make a contract. If I want to make a contract with you, I'm unrelated to business. If the Patriots are going to give you $100 or whatever. That's not a Beis Din thing, regular contract. We have to make a kinyan. If I don't make a kinyan, I can laugh it off. So when I send Michael and Eitan to Pshara, am I sending them out of the building, go make a contract, go decide on your own, solve it on your own, then you're only obligated if you make a kinyan. But if I'm telling them, stay in Beis Din, but instead of going into this room, the 100-0 room, go into that room, we're going to divide up the pie, then we don't need a kinyan. So now let's see another Gemara. And you'll see Lambda starting to glue together seemingly different concepts. Let's see the Gemara. Okay, Amar Rav Ashi. Two lines from where it gets wide, right? The fourth line from the bottom, the Vav Manal. Rav Ashi was under the latest Amarayim. He collated and compiled 400 years of conversations that had taken place in the Beis Medrash. So imagine someone today were to collect the last 400 years of conversations of Torah that took place since the 1700s. That's what Rav Ashi, 300 years. So these people really knew Torah well, and they realized we couldn't maintain that oral tradition, so they wrote it down so we'd be able, 2,000 years later, to sit in Maimonides and try to understand what they were thinking. And that's what I've dedicated my life to turning Gemara from something that seems like hocus-pocus and irrelevant to our lives to the central part of my relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Because I feel like every line I'm learning, I'm trying to understand what Hashem told us for the last thousands of years. So Rav Ashi said, I'm a Rav Ashi, I hope to meet Rav Ashi one day. I have a whole bucket list. When I get to Shemayim with people I plan on meeting and talking with and finding out whether it's right or wrong or what they thought, because they're part of my life. I never met them, but they're more part of my life than, I don't know, LeBron James, because these are people I never met, but I live with them every minute, and I feel honored to be part of that tradition. I hope they're proud of me for what I've dedicated my life to. I could have made a lot of money doing something else, believe me. When we're drinking cold coffee, speaking to high school nitwits like you guys. But I really care about this, okay? So I'm Rav Ashi. Shema Mina. Pshara. I'll prove to you that you don't need a kinyan. Listen to this logic that in a million years you'd never understand unless you sat in this room for the last half an hour. How do you know that you need a kinyan? You don't need a kinyan? The Isak Adaitach Tzricha Kinyan. If you need a kinyan, why do you need three? He passing his life with Meir. If you need three, then why would you need a kinyan? What? What's the connection between two unrelated topics? How many and do you need a kinyan? They're two unrelated details. But now, what did Rav Ashi see? Follow the line. If you need three, that indicates that it's based in. And then once it's based in, Yeah, you can. Now we've climbed into Rav Ashi's mind 1,500 years ago. We know exactly what he's talking about. Because otherwise, there's no way to make coherent sense of the sentence. Because they're two unrelated details. It's a non sequitur. I can prove to you that you don't need a kingdom by the fact you need three. What? Huh? What does that mean? What does number affect methodology of Pshara? Or machinery of Pshara? Protocol of Pshara? Two separate details linked by common lambdas glue. I call it lambdas glue because lambdas means you're taking a detail and abstracting a category. Once you have the category, you can apply it to another detail. So once I see that Rav Meir, who held three, feels that it's based in, I now know what he would say about a Kenyan. It's exactly what Rav Ashi told us. They'll meet him in 400 in Babylonia. And we're right in Rav Ashi's mind. So we have 1 minute. Let me tell you one other. When's the next class? Can I take 2 minutes or are you really like class to class?
Yeah, go ahead.
What? Okay, no, I don't want to abuse it. So the second question is Kenyan or no Kenyans? Okay. The third thing, now it's going to get really cool. I'm going to blow your minds, okay? That gets really cool. Not just how many and whether you need a Kenyan, but how would you do Pshara? Would you just say, look, Eitan, Michael, they're litigants, let me just try to give him 50, just make everyone happy. Or should I at least, even though this isn't a verdict where we're going to come to the conclusion that one of you is 100% correct and one of you is 100% incorrect, one's going to get 100%, one's going to get nothing, at least let me try to assess more or less how I see the case. Let me try to match the Pshara more or less to the facts of the case. So if, let's say, again, Eitan comes in and it looks like you're right. And it looks like Michael's wrong, no insult intended. Okay? So if we're a real psak, I give it all to Eitan. Now that it's a Pshara, okay, I'm not going to give it all to Eitan because that wouldn't be a Pshara. I'll give you 80%. I'll give a little bone to Michael. I'll give Michael 20%. Like, should Pshara be just this dumb allocation, you take 50, you take 50? Or should it be an attempt to be precise and to be as accurate as possible within the overall framework that everyone's going to walk out with something? I mean, I'm going to give 100-0, but I should try to style or format the Pshara based on the evidence available to me. So in theory, what would you say? Okay, but give me dualities. How is that question based on this issue? Is it part of Beis Din or is it independent? How would you connect the broader question to my specific detail? If you feel, what's your name?
Azari,
go ahead.
Azari.
Yeah, go ahead, Azari. If you feel.
If you think that you should split it just 50-50, then it makes more sense that it's separate from Beis Din.
Exactly. Right.
If you're thinking that it's a more exact thing that you have.
If we're in Beis Din, we should try to correlate it to the facts. Again, not 100% zero, because that wouldn't be Pshara, but we should try to match it to some evidence, because that's what Beis Din does. If it's a contract, it's like, go out, make peace, take 50-50. So this question is first raised by the Rush. The Rush was a very interesting personality. The Rush was a French Rav, Talmud of Maharami Rothenberg, who was in prison in France for many, many years. He had to run, and he ran to Spain. So he's an Ashkenazi that turned into a Sephardi. He's the only Rishon who was a tweener, who was both Ashkenazi and Sephardi. Rabbeinu Asher was the Rush, the father of the Torah. The Torah, of course, started the Shulchan Aruch process. So the Rush both wrote his comments on the Gemara, but he also wrote, he was a Bala Tassos. So he wrote most of the Tassos were not one people. I mean, I wish. The great tragedy in history is that Balei HaTosfos didn't write down the Chiddushim. So all of our Tosfos are little scraps and fragments of these 200 years in France and Germany, some of the greatest Talmidei Chachamim lived. I wish they would have written it down like a normal Sefer. It's poorly written Tosfos, it's backwards, the language is hard. You have to really, really work hard to understand a Tosfos. And I spent hours and hours trying to understand a Tosfos. It's worth it because why would I want to spend hours doing anything else when I can try to get closer to Hashem and understand Tosfos? But it's hard. So the Rush wrote his parish. Let's just read the Rush on Sanhedrin. We'll only read one source, okay? The Rush says that it sounds in the Gemara that there are two options, that this was an interesting debate in the Gemara, whether 50-50 or some more precise allocation. He says, because those who use the word bitsua comes from the word split. The Gemara in Brachos says that when you split the bread, who do you give the bread to first? In those days, where there was like a whole procedure and a protocol about meals, today we don't follow that. But in those days, meals are much more formal. So when you make hamotzi, who do you give the bread to? Who makes hamotzi? All these interesting questions. So when you cut the bread, you're not just going to cut it in half. You're going to slice it carefully and make sure the slices are more or less even. So the one, remember we said that some people use the word bitsua and some people use the word pshara, remember? So those who use the word bitsua,
They're thinking about 80-20, 70-30, some split that reflects the facts. Let's read the Rush. Bitsuahu Lashem Shar. It's the same thing as Shar, obviously, the overall general category. Like the Gemara in Brachas says, you put the small piece of bread into the big piece of bread, then you cut it based on how much bread you have available. So when you make pshara, you also lishbar ha'inyan, you cut it, you dissect it, v'lechalko. Line number three in the Rush source, to uman demachmir, and those who feel you have to be more precise, karele bitzua. Stop, he calls it bitzua. Okay? Uman demekel, and another person, those who just call it pshara, last line, karele pshara. Where did pshara come from? Mayim poshrim. Anyone speak Hebrew? Mayim poshrim means lukewarm water. So when you have hot water and you pour cold water, you're sitting there measuring out exactly 2 ounces, 3 ounces, then you take some cold water, you splash it until to your soup until it gets cold, and then you eat it. You don't sit there and measure. Bitsum means measure, dissect, precise, allocation. Pshar means you pour some water in and it gets lukewarm. So manda make a last line of the Rush, kari le pshar. The ain't sarach l'dakde kol kach. You don't have to sit there and say 70, 30, 80. Just give Michael something, give Eitan something. Everyone goes home happy. And you pour cold water into hot water mefashrim. So now we have two ways. Get ready for the mic. Can you do me, when I tell you the mic drop, drop it on the floor. Because it'll be on mic, okay? Hold it up. Two ways to understand pshar, to apply pshar. Precise allocation based on evidence, or just what we call a dumb split. You take, you take. Which two ways do they reflect? So if you hold that pshara, let's repeat it again, if pshara is part of Beis Din, then it would be bitzua. We'd be more careful and precise. If this thing we're calling pshara is not part of Beis Din, then it would be the imprecise, dumb split, just 50-50. Okay? So now, can you theorize, Rabbi Meir, in theory, who requires three? He never talked about this, we think, but if he requires three, which type of pshara would he advocate? Thank you. We're not there yet. Remeir, who requires three, what would he require in theory? Because if it's three, then what is it? Beis Din or autonomous? Beis Din. If it's Beis Din, what should he require? Specific, precise. And the Chachamim, who require one, they view it as non-Beis Din, and they would just say a dumb split. So in theory, I could theorize, Azaria, what Remeir and the Chachamim would say about this issue, even though I don't know that they spoke about it explicitly. Now let's read Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim more carefully. Go back to the Gemara of Vavam and Aleph. Okay. Line that starts with the word bitzua. Bitzua bishlosha divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, you need three, and what does he call it? Chachamim omrim pshara v'yachid. What does he call it? Mic drop. Isn't that amazing? Isn't it amazing when you know what you're looking for, this whole hobglob of details turns out to be really, really logical. And this is, guys, just the tip of the tip of the tip of the tip of the iceberg at one small sugya. I don't know about you, but I feel like I'm standing and trying to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To me, this is the most spiritual thing possible. I want to try to get close to Hashem. So I hope I taught you a little bit of interesting Torah today. Hope I got you excited about trying to do some of this next year. What I'd like to do is as follows. I don't have that much time today. So I'd like to, first of all, hand out brochures. Okay? And whoever wants to meet with me for just 20, 25, 15, just a little more get to know you. I'm not going to say this isn't going to count on your ultimate acceptance, because I'm also, you know, I used to do this for many, 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 many. I interviewed her by Hoffa, interviewed her by Jaffe, so I've done this for many, many, many years. So I'm also getting a read on you. Put it this way. You can only improve your chances of meeting me today. Namely, if, let's say you blow the interview, you say something incorrect, you still can recover when the test comes. But if all of a sudden you really impress me, you're not trying to impress me, all of a sudden I pick up something, this is a really good guy, I'll pass it on to the person interviewing, you know, and that'll factor into it. But no one should feel pressure. Today's not a pressure day. It's not a test day. But it's more chance for you to ask me for some information and just to get some details and, you know, just general. I know it's very, very, very early in the process. So no one should feel any pressure. You have to make a decision by next Tuesday or something. But just to come and get some general details, okay? Now, what I'd really like to do, because in the end, the questions are all the same, and everyone asks me the same questions, and I'll be here until Monday, I'd like to get together with those who are interested just for 15, 20 minutes today, just to give you a couple of one or two statements, and you can ask general questions. That's always more effective than spending a session with each boy answering all their questions. Do you have any time today that you're free? I mean, I can ask Ellen that, but no, you don't have any free periods.
Some people might.
Does anyone have one overlapping free? No.
Here's the one. Wait, do we have X block?
We have X block.
Oh, yeah, we do have X
block.
What's X
block? We have
a large
X block.
Okay, basically, it's like an extended lunch period, so, and it's like much longer. So.
1
okay.
to 220.
It's 137 until 220.
Yeah, we can count.
Okay, so do you guys maybe, is there a time in that lunch? You can bring your food, by the way. We can just get together. Just it'll help me rather and help you also rather than sitting in. You want to make a time to get together with your food? Does 2 sound correct? Okay, well, we'll have it at 2. And whoever doesn't want to go, you don't have to come. Okay, so it's not obligating. There's no better time today, right? Okay, so at 2 to 2, what'd you say, 2:37?
2:20.
No, 2:20. So let's have it at 1:55. Just need a little more. 1:55 till 2:20, we'll just have a general gathering, I guess, in this room. Is this room taken?
Probably not.
Okay, so, and feel free to bring your food. Don't be bashful, you know, eat your food. Okay, and then I'll probably have to leave after. So until then, let me give you a sign-up sheet. Whoever wants to meet with me, we'll just, again, short meetings, no pressure. If you want a brochure, here, take your brochure. Here's a sign-up sheet. Just sign your name, and then I'll just meet with people, just 15, 20 minutes, and one person will call, the next person will call, the next person, and if someone needs to switch, then you'll switch with them, okay? Oh, wow, cold coffee. Just cold coffee. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam.
You know Natan Levine?
Yes, how do you know him?
He lives in there. He was showing me this book that he wrote with a bunch of people, yeah,
during the Shana Bet. Everyone's saying Grisha's not a program. Grisha is like the biggest yeshiva in Israel. So
Yeah,
you don't have to. You put my mom. No, you have to write my mom. I'll know this man. So everyone to meet again, no obligations. You don't have to apply. You don't have to spend your money. But this, I'm here till around 3 today, so 2:25 after being 2 other schools today. So I'm a masochist for punishment. One in Connecticut and one in New York. So I just landed. Okay.
Thank you.
You are welcome, guys. You are welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
What's your name?
Elon Goldman.
Elon Goldman.
Have a good day.
What's your name again?
Naftali.
Naftali, tell me right, Naftali. Okay. Wasn't there a third Kolo guy? Kaplan, where's Kaplan? Oh, all right, remember, right.
you
grew a lot.
Thank you.
You're welcome, guys. Man.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Eitan, you got to get me some lunch. What are you guys eating for lunch today? What are you eating for lunch? What, they serve lunch in the building, or you guys order out?
I don't know. I think we just have orders today, but
I'll ask Ellen. We'll send you. Okay, I don't know where we'll be, but the first person I meet with will let everyone else know. Hello. What time's the class start here? Right now?
Economics.
Rabbi who? Jaffa. Hey, nice to see you. Very few people in my share were smarter than him. A little intimidating teaching. I try my best.
Are you busy right now?
No, you want to be first? Who's first on the list? Just make sure he's all right with it.
First on the list is Shabtai.
So ask the Shabtai if he's all right.
Shabtai take an elective?
Yeah.
So he has an elective period now, but I don't.
You know my
son? Ah, you're the fourth Jesselson. Yilad. Yichai. Baruch Hashem. Eitan, what's your name?
Aria.
What?
Not at all.
What grade are you in, Aria?
Ninth.
You gotta wait a little, okay?